Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel, are you feeling better? You sound like
I do feel better. I feel better. I'm on my antibiotics. It's just got to work its way through my system, you know? I still, you know, it's in me, but it's not taking over me like it had the last week. Stop it. Pause.
Jesus, big time pause. I am back. I'm back in LA finally.
You have been gone for 2 weeks?
Magical Mystery Tour.
Is that what you named it?
Yeah. Four different cities, ending up with WrestleMania in Philadelphia. Cody Rhodes. We'll talk about it a little later. Shout out to Cody Rhodes, the new WWE champion, in one of the greatest wrestling matches I've ever seen before in my life. It was fantastic. Main event, WrestleMania Sunday night. I watched it from my hotel room.
Okay, let's start there.
Yeah.
Okay. You have been talking about WrestleMania for, the greater part of this year. You even signed me up to get to go to WrestleMania with the media pass. Yeah. All that talk, all that work to get there, and you don't even attend the grand event? This is like their Super Bowl. How do you not go to the Super Bowl of wrestling? What was the purpose of even being there? Are you sick? What happened? Did you not have tickets?
They have tickets. The WWE is a very generous organization. I should say something about WrestleMania as well. Now, a lot of people out here talk about wrestling in a derogatory way. Wrestling's for nerds, wrestling's for weirdos, whatever. I went to WrestleMania Saturday night, right? And it was the best party. It was fantastic. Drewski, 2 Chainz, Coach and P from QC, Wale was with us, Kaz was with us, George Kittle was there. Like, there were so many. It was hip hop and black. Winnie Harlow was there at WrestleMania. Everybody was hanging out. Michael Rubin's there. Everyone's hanging out doing the WrestleMania thing, okay? Everybody's there. It was a party. Snoop, everyone's there. Lil Wayne, everybody. WrestleMania is a big time event. It's one of the best events ever. It was 40 degrees, maybe lower. And it was outside.
Wait.
It was brick. It was brick, okay? And there were a lot.
The match was outside?
WrestleMania was outside at Lincoln Financial Field in Philly. It was brick out there, as they would say on the East Coast. I was out there with Cass. Me and Cass are sitting there, man. Shout out to Cass. Please watch the Masked Man show.
Oh, Cass
Please
is
watch
great.
The Ringer Wrestling show. Cass is great. Like, I'm out there. I'm with Cass. And Cass is like, Cass looks at me. And Cass is like, bruh. We get hand warmers from people in the audience. First of all, I left early Saturday night. I was there. I left before the main event, right? I had been there for like 3 hours. Just sitting in the cold. And I wasn't prepared for it. I didn't bring the right shit. Because remember, I went from Orlando to Miami to New York to Philly. So there was a mishmash of clothes. And so I didn't have the right stuff. And I didn't realize it was going to be outside. And so Sunday night, talked myself out of it. But I watched it in my hotel room, and I am definitely going to go to SummerSlam. I watched it in my hotel room. It was fantastic. I cried when Cody Rhodes won the championship.
Okay.
Do you know the story of Cody Rhodes? Do you know the story?
I'll tell you what I know, which isn't much, and you can pick up. Remember, my dad's all-time favorite wrestler is Dusty Rhodes. So I'm very familiar with the American Dream.
All right.
I've recently learned Cody's the American Nightmare. So, okay, I understand it. And I know he has a black wife, and that's it.
There you go.
That's it.
Dusty Rhodes never won the WWE Championship.
Mm.
He was a champion in WCW, in the territories and all of that stuff. But he was the common man, the everyman.
Right.
The ultimate babyface. And he never was able to win the championship in the WWE. Cody Rhodes won that championship. And Cody's road to get there, going to All Elite, coming back, not sure what the relationship with Vince was going to be like. because he was a free agent.
Why did he leave?
That's probably more of a cast question, but like AEW is, and I like AEW as well. AEW is an upstart wrestling promotion. And like they had Cody doing some different stuff. They had him being Stardust at one point, his gimmick.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's the same person?
No, okay. So you're thinking of Goldust.
Oh, okay, okay.
So Goldust is Cody Rhodes' brother.
His brother. That's why I was confused. Yeah. Okay, okay, okay. Yeah. I'm back. All right.
Goldust is Cody Rhodes' brother. Anyway, that's probably a cast question in terms of why exactly things sour with the WWE, but he was there with All Elite for a while. And then he came back and the fans wanted it so bad. Like Samantha Irwin, who is the ring announcer, the very accomplished black lady with a booming voice, Cody Rhodes. She's like very famous in the wrestling circles. She actually could barely announce him as the winner after the main event Monday night because she was crying.
Okay, yeah. Here are my questions, and I'm sure a lot of people out there wonder this. I didn't know that about his dad, that his dad hadn't won. I know that Roman Reigns has been, the winner for like 3 years or something like that?
He's been champion. Yeah, he's been one of the longest reigning champions, okay. Yeah.
All right, okay. So I knew it was a big deal in that sense, but tell me if I'm wrong, but they know who's going to win. So I guess I just don't understand. How, I mean, you don't know that as an audience member. I would assume a Samantha might as a ring announcer. Cody definitely knows, but they go out there, they practice, they figure out how they're going to do it. It's acting. So what was emotional about it?
All right. So this is the thing. I'm going to explain it to you the way Zac Efron's character, he was playing, Kevin Von Erich in the Iron Claw explains it. I think this is one of the best ways you can explain pro wrestling and what it means to be a champion. So he was like, you do good at your job, you get better. They treat you better, right? You get a promotion. He was like, being the champion or getting a belt is the ultimate promotion. It's the organization saying that the crowd is behind you. They love you, your work, your character, your entire thing. You've reached the pinnacle. And in competition, you reach the pinnacle by taking it from somewhere else. But like, if you're working in like a law firm or if you're working as like in a traditional job, someone has to give you a promotion. Someone has to make you a partner. And so in the WWE, while it is true that everybody involved in the main event knew that Cody was going to win in the main event, what they're actually celebrating is him getting to the top and him working his way to the top through the injuries, him refining his character, and the legacy of his family getting to the top. That they're celebrating his promotion. That would probably be the best way to explain it. Because like he explains it perfectly in the Iron Claw. And when you see that happen for Cody, and you know how hard he's worked, because the work is grueling and very, very hard, and you know the legacy of it, it was just very gratifying to see.
That makes a lot of sense. And who decides who's going to be the winner?
Triple H, I would imagine.
One man?
Probably. So Triple H is booking these things. And so I would imagine that it's Triple H and a whole creative team that get together. Because remember now, like Roman has to go in there and lose his belt. It's called putting somebody over. So like if they put us in a room, right? And they say, it's wrestling talks, like putting someone over. If they put us in a room and they say, hey, Van, you're going to drop the belt to Rachel. Well, Rachel, you have to agree to put me over. You have to go, okay, that works. And they have to convince you why you losing your belt is good for either your story or what they're going to do with you or whatever. Hulk Hogan was very famous for not putting people over. it would be like they'd ask Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan's famous line was, that doesn't work for me, brother. You know what I mean? And like the Montreal
continues to be an asshole.
A jerk. The Montreal Screwjob of 1997, I think it was when Bret Hart, one of my favorite all-time wrestlers, didn't want to drop the belt to Shawn Michaels because he didn't want to lose in Canada. He wanted to drop the belt, but he was leaving to go to WWE. So Vince McMahon screwed Bret Hart. And whenever Shawn Michaels, the way it was supposed to go, Shawn Michaels was supposed to put Bret Hart in the sharpshooter. And then Bret Hart was supposed to reverse it and put Shawn Michaels in the sharpshooter. And then Bret Hart would win. Well, what Vince McMahon had them do is when Shawn Michaels put Bret Hart in the sharpshooter, he had them ring the bell and act like Bret tapped out. And because he just went to take the belt off of him. So it's very wrestling, you know, it's like I'm in. But everyone that knows what this meant for Cody, all the wrestlers came out from backstage and were in the ring clapping. Wow. His mom came into the ring. And by the way, this was an exciting, exciting, exciting main event. Do you know how many people showed up in this main event? The Rock showed up. The Undertaker showed up. John Cena showed up. The Usos showed up. Seth freaking Rollins showed up. Everybody. And it was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. Bloodline rules. So it was cool. Anyway, that's pleasantries. I'm back. I'm tired. There's a lot of stuff to get to. Shout out to the WWE. Thank you for the hospitality. Shout out to Kaz. Shout out to Shoemaker. Shout out to Water. Shout out to everybody. Shout out to Kyle. Shout out to everyone from the Ringer who was out there. Philadelphia. We had a blast. We had a ball. It's very cold. Now, it's time to talk hip hop. And we're not going to be nice about it. Next.
Go ahead, Mr. I'm not going to be nice about it.
First of all, I would like to say this, because I have to couch this by saying this.
All right.
Listen to a lot of J. Cole. Always have.
But
J. Cole is one of the absolute best, most talented rappers we've ever had.
But everybody has their favorites. Right? Everybody. You know, I always send this stuff around, like one's got to go, blah, 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 blah.
Everybody has their favorites.
Everybody has their favorites. Out of those big three.
Everybody has their favorites.
Is he your favorite? Because it'll be interesting to hear your opinion if he is. I mean, period, it'll be interesting, but even more so if he's your favorite out of those three.
He probably is.
Interesting. Okay, so Kendrick's is mine, Jeff said.
I really enjoy Kendrick. Kendrick is probably the best of the three because he's got such variety to his game. But Cole is probably my favorite of the three because I just like Cole, man. I like the things he chooses to rap about. I like the way he rap. I think his voice quality is amazing. I love Cole. But I don't want to call him J. Cole anymore. I want to call him J. Cuck.
Man.
Because what he I do, I'm serious, man. I want to call him J. Cuck. Because he just cucked out. And I don't know. I'm toxic. I don't know any other way to say it, man. J. Cole let Nas down.
Yeah, again.
So,
I actually want to hear Nas'
for those of you
response.
Who don't know. For those of you guys who don't know, Kendrick Lamar on the latest album by Metro Boomin and Future called We Don't Trust You, he basically snapped at Drake mostly, but Cole as well. There's a line in there where he says, fuck the big three, nigga, it's just big me. And the big three is obviously Cole, Drake, Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
So, the gauntlet was laid down. Everybody is waiting to see whether or not Drake is going to respond. Who knows if he will or if he won't. But J. Cole did respond. He released a surprise EP. Nobody was expecting it, called Might Delete Later. And on the EP, there was a song called 7 Minute Drill. And in 7 Minute Drill, he talked about Kendrick Lamar. He said some things about old Kendrick. Now, was it a scathing diss? No. Was it something that it felt like he kind of didn't want to be doing? No. He has a history with Kendrick Lamar. They're friends, they're pals, they're buddies. And he even says during this, it hurts me to do this because I fuck with this nigga, blah, blah, blah. But he talked about the fact that you know, Kendrick had 4 albums in 12 years, nigga, I could divide. You know, that's a Jay lyric. And he talked about the fact that he liked some of his albums better than other ones and that he was here to go back at Kendrick, blah, blah, blah. He said something I think is true. He said that your second one was okay, but niggas gassed it. He's talking about To Pimp a Butterfly. Pimp a Butterfly is amazing art. I didn't like To Pimp a Butterfly that much. I didn't like it that much. It's amazing art. Amazing art. It's good, but it's not that enjoyable. And everybody came back and acted like it was the greatest thing that you could ever listen to. It works incredibly well as an art piece. As a piece of music that you're supposed to put on and enjoy, not so much. Okay, don't get me wrong. Love Kendrick Lamar. Love him to death. All the way back to Section 80. Love Kendrick Lamar. But I thought that J. Cole had a point there. Anyway, the Dreamville Festival was this past weekend in North Carolina. And J. Cole went on stage at the Dreamville Festival and said the following.
I've been happy. I've been moving on my own accord, off my own desires, my own wants. Now, why am I saying all of that? All of that shit led me up into this point. 10 years later, after this song, I'm here. Here I am. I've been just chasing my shit. You know what I mean? Like following my dream and just trying to like head to the fall off in the way that I wanted to do it. And so I put out this project on Friday called Might Delete Later. I don't know how many people done checked it out or whatever, but I put this project out. And I swear to God, I'm so proud of that project because I know one, it's just a lead up. It's just an EP that leads me up to this thing that I've been working on for a long time. And I know the work it took to get to a certain type of skill level. And I love this shit. So that shit mean a lot to me, right? So I'm so proud of that project, except for one part. It's one part of that shit that make me feel like, man, that's the lamest shit I ever did in my fucking life, right? And I know this is not what a lot of people want to hear. I know I can hear my niggas up there right now like, nah, don't do that. But I got to keep it 100 with y'all, right? I damn near had a relapse, right? Because y'all heard some shit that happened two, 3 weeks ago, however long it was. Y'all heard that bazooka that was dropped on the motherfucking game, right? So all of this time of me moving on my own accord, for the first time I was tested. Why am I tested? Because I got the world and I got my niggas like, what you going to do, Cole? And I was conflicted because, one, I know my heart, you know what I mean? And like, I know how I feel about my peers, these two niggas that I just been blessed to even stand beside in this game, let alone chase their greatness, right? So I felt conflicted because I'm like, bro, I know I don't really feel no way, but the world want to see blood. So I say all of that to say, in my spirit of trying to like get this music out, I ain't gonna lie to y'all. I moved in a way that I spiritually feel bad on me. Like I try to like jab my nigga back and I try to keep it friendly. But at the end of the day, when I listen to it and when it comes out and I see the talk, that shit don't sit right with my spirit. That shit make me feel, that shit disrupts my fucking peace. So what I want to say right here tonight is, in the midst of me doing that and in that shit, trying to find a little angle and downplay this nigga's fucking catalog and his greatness, I want to say right now tonight, how many people think Kendrick Lamar is one of the greatest motherfuckers to ever touch a fucking microphone? Dreamville, y'all love Kendrick Lamar, correct? As do I. So I just want to come up here and be like, publicly be like, bruh, that was the lamest, like, goofiest shit. And I say all that to say, it made me feel like 10 years ago when I was moving incorrectly. And I pray that God align me back up on my purpose and on my path. You know what I mean? I pray that my nigga really didn't feel no way. And if he did, my nigga, I got my chin out. Take your best shot. I'm going to take that shit on the chin, boy. Do what you do.
Rach, what do you think about that?
Okay. I can tell I'm already going to have a completely different take than you. I am not one who gets excited by rap beefs. I understand it. I understand how it brings a lot to hip hop, and there's a whole conversation piece, and it really gets the people going and people look forward to that. But I guess for me, it's just been such a long time that I was moved by one. It's not something that I've come to anticipate or expect when it comes to current rappers in this game. So, of course, I was excited by Kendrick and what he had to say about, you know, fuck the big three, it's just Big Me, because I'm a Kendrick fan. But it wasn't because of him dissing Drake or J. Cole and what may come out of it. It's just because I was happy to just get a Kendrick verse. That's just what my excitement was about. So I take the opinion of, or the stance of, J. Cole doesn't seem to be that type of rapper to me. And although I like J. Cole, I like him more on features than I feel like I do on his own albums. I just still feel like I'm waiting for that one album that's just gonna hit. Like, there's no denying that Good Kid, Mad City is not a fantastic album from start to finish. And yeah, anyways. And so I just, so there hasn't been like that moment for me for J. Cole. But I respected what he had to say when he got on stage, because to me, he basically was like, I'm not doing this for y'all. I know what y'all want. I know what is expected of me. And I fell into that trap and I tried. But I'm going to have a selfish moment where I'm going to look out for me. And this is what I need, because I'm the only one who's got to live with me. I got to look myself in the mirror. I got to be able to do me. And to do for everybody else and not what I want to do is very unhealthy for my mental state. And so he did something that definitely, you see apologies, but not within 48 hours. I think that's what it was. And so he said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a decision for myself. And I appreciated that. Was that the sexy response? Was that the response that everyone was anticipating, especially because he put out a diss track and we still have yet to hear anything from Drake? No. But I appreciate what he was brave enough to sit on that stage and say. We always talk about Black men and their mental health, right? Front and center. On stage, Dreamville, this is a man talking about mental health, certain struggles, what he's been through, where he is now, and how he's going to continue to be a better version of himself. Loved it.
So it's very important that we say that, yes, we talk about Black men and their mental health.
I want you to feel bad. I want you to feel bad.
That's very true. No, I don't feel bad at all. I don't feel bad at all. I like my disses toxic. I like my rap beefs toxic. Dismantling, debasing, psychotic. I said this on the internet. So this is a very testosterone-filled Cro-Magnon take.
Oh.
You know what? Remember The Godfather? You ever see it?
I actually did.
Okay. So in The Godfather, the first Godfather, Mike is being instructed about what it means to go to the mattresses, which in the mafia it means to battle, to beef, to go to war. And I think it was Clemenza. I can't remember. Maybe it was Clemenza, who says to Michael, he's like, we haven't gone to the mattresses in years. And it's good. It's good to go to the mattresses every now and again. It clears out all the bad blood. It clears out all the bad blood. All the bad blood is gone. Whatever you have to do, you do it, you move on, it's better. I think rap beef is the same. I think every now and again, people who say so many words and are around each other, they just need to get shit off their chest. Just get it off your chest. Now, if it goes past friendly rap sparring or not friendly rap sparring, if it goes into the streets and all of that, that's a different thing. That's not going to happen here. Right. Most of the beefs that actually turned into street stuff actually didn't start on wax. They started in the streets and then they presented themselves on wax. So there's very few actual beefs that people got slapped up, mopped up because of something that they said. There's some. And then it ended up into something more. Normally, it's two guys who actually don't like each other from some actual street stuff and they rap about each other, too. To me, it's healthy for rap. These guys are type A personalities and ladies, because the ladies beef all the time.
They do.
the ladies are actually more out there with their beefs than anyone. The ladies be beefing. Fuck you, bitch. That's the ladies. They don't care. They don't give a fuck. They beef all the time. It's actually the men that are scared to go to the mattresses. The men are scared to get the bad blood out. The men are scared. The men, they're the ones, right? So it's like, whatever. I think for what hip hop is, the competition of hip hop, every single one of these guys gets on these songs and talks about the fact that no one raps better than them. Like Cole himself. Cole yes. gets on records and he says, nobody raps better than him. No one raps better than him. I'm the best. That's a part of hip hop. I'm the best.
Sure.
I'm the GOAT. I'm number one. Nobody raps better than me. And then as soon as somebody says, hey, I rap better than you, it's not my spirit to prove that I'm the better rapper. But I'm sorry. I'm toxic. I'm like, it's like everybody, hey, yo, I'm numero uno. It's me. It's me. I'm Cole. I'm Drake. I'm number one. I rap. I do this shit for fun. Blah, 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 blah. Hey, it's Kendrick Lamar. I think I rap better than you. No. I don't want to do that. I like you. You're my friend. I don't want to. I said that I'm the best and I'm the best ever. And I'm not number two or number three. I'm number one. But I don't want to rap about it. I don't want to have to rap and do the raps that go along with it. I'll just say it. I don't like that type of shit. I'm not a participation trophy type of motherfucker. It's just not who I am. This maybe I need to work this out in therapy. My thing is, just fucking do the raps. Rap the shit. You talking about how much, like, you like him, that's cool. Obviously, he doesn't feel the same way. He didn't have a problem shooting a shot across your bow for no apparent fucking reason. So, I don't know. I don't know, bro. I'm just saying, like, I love Cole, and I will always love Cole, and I will. A part of me has to respect this move. Man, it's hip hop, though, bro. I'm sorry,
but like, it's hip-hop. People are also acting like he did not put out a diss track. He did. It's not like okay, but
it
it's
makes
also
it worse. It makes it worse that he put it out in the track to that.
It's. I think it actually would have been worse if he was like, look, I don't want to do this. I think y'all would have talked about him way more. Or maybe not. He got y'all's hopes up and he didn't. Or a lot of people don't even think it was that great of a diss track. So maybe he's got the feedback from it. Maybe he got the feedback from it and was like, I don't want to keep this going.
It wasn't that
And to
great.
Be honest, what he said has already kind of been said. People have assessed Kendrick's albums like that already. They've been talking about that.
It wasn't that great. You know? It wasn't that great, but at least it showed, like, Drake hasn't said anything. And here's the thing about Drake. Drake has got to respond to Kendrick Lamar. He must do it. And I'll tell you why. Kendrick Lamar is not going to eclipse Drake in terms of the popular consciousness. Drake has too much real estate. Kendrick Lamar is a much more accomplished artist than Drake. He's a higher level artist than Drake is, for sure. But Drake has this critical mass of popular music, popular great music, by the way. Popular great music, and a great rapper as well. He puts out a lot of music. He's always fiddling around with different styles. He is in your face. He's a part of the popular music discussion. Kendrick Lamar is more of the aloof, reluctant artist. So he's never going to be able to compete with Drake in that situation. The only way for him to really eclipse Drake is to bully him. He's been trying to bully him for years. The only way for him to eclipse Drake is to go, you know what? That guy has more records sold than me. He has more number ones than me. He's a bigger part of pop culture. He's more memeified. He's all of that. But you know what? Doesn't matter because he's scared of me. So this is a big deal for Kendrick. He's sick of it. It's like, whatever. I got all the publishers and all of that stuff. Like, whatever. That's white people get that shit out. But what he can do is say, yeah, your GOAT is afraid of me. And a lot of people are going to be like, he's right.
Who do you think has more respect?
Kendrick Lamar. But it means respect from who though? If you're talking about
who? From black people. Who do you think they respect?
I don't think it's that simple, right? Because if you were to say, I think that's too broad. Because okay. I think Drake has, in terms of a popular music hold, Drake has a hold over a large percentage of black women that Kendrick might not. Black ladies love Kendrick, but it's different types of people. We're not a monolith. It's different types of people.
You're right.
Different types of audiences. You know, if you had Booby Trap on the River in Miami, Drake probably got all your respect. If you had the Black Lives Matter march or in Sociology 101, Kendrick probably got all your respect. And there is some crossover. There's definitely some crossover, right?
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So we know that we are anticipating J. Cole's new album. J. Cole puts out Might Delete Later. You get this diss track.
Which was good.
We get this apology. And then, what is it going to be called? The Fall Off? That comes out. Uh-huh. Right? Something like that. If in that, he disses Kendrick and Drake. If he does that, one, will you take some of this back? If he's like, I changed my mind. Fuck my mental health.
First of all, I'm not saying fuck his mental health. You're saying fuck his mental health.
No. All y'all are saying that, who are calling him corny and all this stuff and saying it's weak just because this is a decision that he tried to make. Second, if he then on this album, let's say he doesn't diss them, but he still refers to himself as the best and like nobody's better than me,
J. Cole
is that problematic?
J. Cole has lost the ability to say that he is the best. He refuses to compete. J. Cole is, like I said, bar for bar, my favorite out of the three. But he has lost the ability to say that he is the best because he refuses to compete.
I do not agree.
If you compete and you lose, you can come back and say, I had a bad day.
But what is competition? Okay? Because competing could be putting out a fire album. Right? Competing could be putting more albums out. You're only making it one category.
This is rap direct. Beats. This is direct competition right here.
Okay.
This is direct comp. And you're right. You know what? That's actually a good, like, you're right. That's actually a good, that's a good, because it's more than just making records back and forth. But this is somebody saying, hey, I want smoke. And you saying, no, look, everybody has to make the decisions that's best for them. But I was ridiculously disappointed in J. Cole. Because J. Cole, once again, has dissed people before.
Yes, he has.
J. Cole, the track where he gets on there and he disses Kanye. J. Cole had a whole situation where he was talking about No Name in a rap. He's dissed people before. He doesn't want to diss this nigga.
He explained why he doesn't want to do it anymore is what he said. Didn't say specific to Kendrick. He said he doesn't want to do it anymore. And he explains it in that whole spiel he gives on stage. So, you know, respect his journey, Van.
I respect it. Hey, I respect what he did for him. But in the grand scheme of rap, I don't. J. Cole is still one of the greats of all time. He's going to be, but this is a ding. This is a ding on the whole thing. It's a ding on it. I still can't wait for it to fall off. Because really, he said something in there that was so true. He said something in there that was so true in 7 Minute Drill. He goes, Kendrick had dropped before, but he was trailing behind. But like now, Cole was inching ahead. Cole murdered Drake on First Person Shooter. The difference between Cole and Drake and where they are right now creatively was so evident on that song. Like, he murdered Drake on First Person Shooter. Cole was in his journey. He was in his bag. He was in his thing. He had said that he was getting the bronze medal. It wasn't like that anymore. Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, it wasn't what everybody thought it was going to be. It was good, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It wasn't the bona fide that I thought it was going to be. That's facts. I love some records off there. I thought it was better than it was bad. It's good. It's good music. But those guys, in terms of Cole taking the pole position, being number one, they were vulnerable. They were vulnerable. He's been rapping better than them. He's been rapping better than them. And he fucking threw Ragu over the whole fucking thing.
No, I swear to you, he did.
Don't. By the way, I'll tell you something else. This is another goddamn case for the BBI. This is a case for the BBI.
Why?
Because, man, what I heard up there on that stage in Dreamville was biracial angst. It's even from Drake. Drake, biracial Silence. Angst. There's some angst. Yeah, Drake got off against Meek. That's cool. But when we talk about some real cultural capital N-word niggas, Pusha T, Kendrick Lamar, what y'all gonna do? Case for the BBI. How deep?
Sounds like cases.
Case files. Michael Harriet, biracial. Got to open up some case files on J. Cole. Very, very biracial move. Very light-skinned there at Dreamville. Love J. Cole. This is a case for the BBI. And I'll be looking into this, along with my compatriots over there at the BBI. We'll be looking into this, J. Cole. We'll be making a determination in the next couple of weeks about J. Cole, about whether or not we think that what happened here has anything to do with tragic light-skinnedness and biracialness. We'll see. Tracy, we got to really lean on you on this one right here. All right, Sexy Red. Hey, get it sexy. She went to a school, and it was in her hometown of St. Louis. She says, play the audio real quick of what happened to Sexy Red when she tried to go get back to the kids.
Nobody called the police.
So this school put me, I came up here, got you, tried to talk to the kids, get them aware of that, they're going to put me off on me. Tell me, that's my weed, watch this.
He gonna try to get married.
Fuck that old man.
Bitch, you're nobody.
Like I'm finna sit with y'all.
They ain't come to see you, Otis. Bitch. You heard who they screaming for? Hi, y'all. Bro, we popped my head up.
Rachel.
What was she supposed to do at the school?
She was supposed to give him the word of the day. Supposed to talk to the chillins. Talk to the kids. If in fact she smelled like weed, do you have a problem with them not letting her come and talk to the kids?
I do. I actually do have a problem with that. She smelled like it. Okay. If you told me that she had a blunt on her, or, you know, like it fell out of her pocket, or she was smoking as she was walking into the school, then maybe I would say something about that. I would say, yeah, like, you have every right. But, I mean, if she smelled like it, I would have given her some perfume. Be like, hey, like, I can kind of smell it on you. You know, like, here's a school shirt to change into. If I really had that much of a problem with it, here's some perfume. Here's some essential oils. You know, what grade was this?
Not sure. I would imagine it was some sort of high school, though.
It says a local high school
in her St. Louis hometown.
Here's my thing, too. You're letting Sexy Red come and give the word of the day. You have to know what her music is about. You have to know what she showcases for the public. So if you're okay with all of that, why can't she do the word of the day and smell like weed? She talks about it in her music.
Yeah.
You're already bringing her, so you know what she stands for. It's not like they brought Obama and he smelled like weed. I don't get it. You already know what you're signing up for. This is already ridiculous.
All right. So I'll be quick on this one. No, she shouldn't have been able to go in there smelling like weed. No way.
Ooh.
No. No.
How the tables have turned. Why?
Okay. So
look at you being all rude.
So here's the thing about the tables, right? Anytime I'm talking about stuff, it's about what adults can do. Adults want to fuck. Adults want to have OnlyFans. Adults want to twerk at places. Adults want to do all that. It's all about what adults can do.
All right.
Adults, people who are grown. If you are grown and you want to be a sexual being or do your thing, whatever, whatever, boom, you do it. It's all about what adults can do. Adults, people who are adults. Adults. Let adults do what they want to do. Consenting adults. First of all, I don't think Sexy Red has any business at a high school. I don't. Because Sexy Red's music is super duper adult. Right? It's super duper adult.
Okay.
It's bust off in my asshole, come in my shit.
Thank you.
You know, all of that. All of that. So I don't think she has any business at a high school, right? Because I think that the kids need to understand. I get it. The kids like Sexy Red. I think the kids need to have, and by the way, once again, if Sexy Red wants to do something and have outreach and kids involved in it, it's fine. It's fine. It's cool. But to go to the school where the kids are, I don't think that Sexy Red should probably be going to the school. There's nothing wrong with Sexy Red. There's nothing wrong with Sexy Red's music. There's nothing wrong with any of that stuff. But that stuff, to me, a lot of it is not for kids. It's not for kids. Now, that doesn't mean a kid's not going to listen to it. Kids are going to listen to it. They're definitely going to listen to it, right? Yeah. Rap, I was listening to it the whole time. But like, one time when we were at McKinley, Master P was supposed to come to the school. And everybody was excited Master P was coming to the school. And then Mr. Brown was like, Master P can't come to the school. He's like, much respect to Master P and everything that he's done, but we can't have make crack like this at McKinley. We can't do that. There has to be a line, right? And then if you come to the school smelling like weed, look, in adult places, if you go to Ralph's smelling like weed, cool. If you go to church smelling like weed, fine. The school is a drug-free zone.
But that's my point.
You can't go to the school smelling like weed.
You're proving my point, I guess. The principal didn't let Master P come from the jump once he heard it because he knows what he represents. If you know what Sexy Red represents and you invite her anyway, then I don't feel like then you should just let her do the word of the day. Isn't that done over an intercom anyway? Isn't that done on a stage in front of a podium? It's not like she would be one with the kids, or it's done in an auditorium. I just don't understand. To me, it shouldn't have gotten that far, and I agree with you. But the moment you say yes to her, you say yes to all of her, and they should have let her do it. That's what I think.
And this is not
when I
all
look
rappers.
At her, I see that about. I think about her coochie being pink and her booty hole being brown. I think that when I see her immediately.
And I'm good with that. I'm glad that those colors work for her. Look, this is not about all rappers either. This is about I'm not dissing her because of that. Like this, you know what I'm saying? Like this is not about all rappers. It's plenty of rappers that can go talk to the kids. Plenty of them, right? But like even the rappers that's shooting up the whole block, maybe you shouldn't be the one to go talk to the kids, man. Maybe we don't want the kids to shoot up the block. Yes. Maybe we should think about, you know, if J. Cole wanted to go talk to the kids, that's actually not too bad. And J. Cole's lyrics, it's bitches and all of that stuff in there. It's not like perfectly pure messaging, but it's different, right? It's different. But If you're a drill rapper, you probably don't have no. You probably shouldn't be in a high school. That's like stuff that we should probably be trying to guide the kids through, not immerse them into. That's Sexy Red. She, you know, we got maybe not for the kids. You know, maybe not for the kids. Maybe like not give the kids too much anyway. But I'll support Sexy. I love Sexy. Get in Sexy. So
we support her on the show.
Of course. So I've been watching the Jerrod Carmichael show even more.
Well, it's only been two episodes, but yes.
I've been watching it even more. It's a fantastic show. No?
In what way?
I think it's shot beautifully. I think it's really interesting. I think it's brutally honest.
Well, that
in a
is.
Way that a well, in a way that in a way that not a lot of reality shows are. I just think it's a fucking interesting attempt at reality. What are your issues with it?
I can't speak to how it's shot because that's just not my world. But I'm worried for him.
Yeah.
And that's what I think about when I watched it. I agree with you. It is brutally honest in a way that I know because I've had these conversations with people, makes people uncomfortable, but I like that. I like that it makes people uncomfortable because he's living his life in an honest way in front of the camera, which takes a lot for people to be able to do. But I keep wondering, he's revealing so much of his personal life that it makes me wonder, what's the end goal here? And I guess I'm just, I'm worried about him.
What because, mean, what's the end goal? What would that
well,
be?
Like,
what's
I
the,
just feel like people end, are having a negative end, reaction to him. I feel like people are having a negative
goal
reaction.
Of The Real Housewives? What's the end goal?
Well, that's a continuous thing. That's those people have made a professional career about it. We get it every season. The end goal is to come back for the next season. This is not what this is. This is a documentary about his life. And I just...
That's not what it is. It's the Jerry Carmichael reality show. It's very clear in the title.
I don't think it's going to go past this. I don't think it's going to continue. I think this is meant to be one season. That's how I took it. Could be wrong.
What would be an end goal?
Well... The end goal to me when I started watching it is that I just revealed in my special that I am gay and I am living my life as a gay man in my 30s openly for the first time. That's mm-hmm. what I thought. And he wants to show it that to us, period. I guess there's certain things that he's done that I'm like the sucking of the toes.
Yeah.
The last bit, which Ashley, you can play, which is what kind of led us to having this conversation. We've talked about both episodes as they've come out because, yes, they've been interesting, but there have also been some things that people have had an adverse reaction to. Ashley, can you play the clip for this one?
I sometimes joke to him that, like, our relationship is like that of, like, a slave and the master son who, like, teaches me how to read by candlelight. Yeah, he groans too, because he's a good person. He doesn't like that fucking joke. I like that joke. That's my burden. I think that shit's hilarious. Yes, sir. Marie Antoinette, sir. I don't know what that is. Yeah. That's a joke. That's from.
Yeah. See, this is what I mean. One, that should never be okay. We joked about that role play in sex when it comes to master slave before. But one thing, if you are going to do it, that's something we don't need to be privy to. For you shouldn't be doing it, but you should. I just said you shouldn't be doing it, but you definitely shouldn't tell us about it, is my point. Then please.
Wait a second.
Don't
girl.
You
wait a second.
Fucking side eye me. I would never be a part of any of that shit.
Wait a second. What did you mean by that?
No, I meant exactly what I said. You shouldn't be doing it. And second,
why did that,
if you are, we don't need to know.
But why
I'll say
that
it again.
Caveat? Why that caveat?
Because he's obviously doing it. And so I'm like, we don't need to know that. I don't want to know what people do. I'm sure there are other people that do it. I don't want to know it. But my first thing was, you shouldn't be doing it. And don't you dare try to make this into something that it is not.
I'm not making it into anything. I'm just saying, sometimes when the caveats come out, I get, and you shouldn't be
That's
doing it.
That's not a caveat. You shouldn't be doing it.
But if you are doing it, just don't
said,
tell nobody.
No, like, you shouldn't even be sharing it. You shouldn't be okay with sharing it. You should see how wrong that is. It just
see,
seems like,
so
just
here's,
seems
so this, this is
that
we
he's
disagree.
Working things out. Okay.
Yeah.
In real time, that sometimes I'm like, maybe you should just be talking to your therapist about that. And I don't know how helpful that is for you to be showing that to us and open to so much judgment while you're still trying to figure it out. That's why I say, like, so what are we trying to do here? That's just my opinion as I watch it. These are the thoughts that I have.
Okay.
Okay. For the record, I am not into that kind of role play at all.
Look,
I'm only fucking with a black man anyway.
Right. I have never
in my life done it, thought about it, anything.
Okay. But here's the thing, though. My thing is this. If you're going to do it, you might as well not hide it, right? It's so fucking warped. Okay, so listen. It's so warped, right? I don't believe in I don't believe that it's safer if you just don't tell anyone. I don't believe in that. I don't believe that it's like, oh, shit, okay, I like to put my dick in the meat grinder. If you like to put your dick in the meat grinder and then turn the meat grinder on, nigga screaming from the high heavens. I like meat grinder sex.
So people if you who have like sex with dogs, tell us.
But see, sex with dogs is different, though, because sex with dogs is illegal and rape of a dog. So you're at that point, you're admitting to a crime. So you probably shouldn't say that, you nasty motherfucker. But that's like a crime and very abusive to the animal. So you shouldn't be doing that. This is something that, I think it's warped. I think it's sick. I think he has a sickness. I think this is very telling, especially with conversations that we've just had, that he wants to be dominated by a white man while calling him master is very interesting. But look, people have kinks. I don't know. People have kinks.
That turns you on. That's wild.
I think it's fucked up. But people have kinks. People are into stuff. But I think if you're into it, you might as well fucking admit to it. We've seen you sucking the motherfucker's toes on the first episode. And we've seen that everybody that's come in there besides Tyler has been white. So there's obviously something inherent about whiteness that he finds very, very, very attractive. Now, what is the highest form of American whiteness? It's European dominance. That's the highest form of it. If you like white people like that, like if you're straight up sexually into whites, sexual whites, if you're into that, you probably do get off on the domination and the control and the fucking power, the power that goes along with whiteness. That's probably part of what you like. You probably find that freeing, or maybe you find safety in it, or maybe you do whatever. Like you probably enjoy that. And so that's deeply troubling. Deeply troubling. But look, might as well admit to it. Now everybody knows where Gerard Carmichael stands. Nut in his face and call him Toby. That's what he likes. And that's what he's into. Odd. Weird. By the way, if you watch this fucking documentary,
disturbing.
Nobody
gross. Like, it's more than that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's disturbing. It's gross. It's dehumanizing. But look, people are into all types of... People are into all types of stuff. I saw this one thing one time where this guy like wanted a woman with the stilettos to stomp on his nuts. His nutsack.
Oh, my God.
His stomp on his nutsack. He was dressed up like a baby. Remember HBO's Real Sex?
Where
you ever watched that?
Did you see that?
You remember HBO's Real Sex? You ever heard of splashing?
No.
Where people just like to fucking throw food all over themselves and like they're splosh. Look it up right now. People like to throw food all over themselves. They get super messy and then they have sex and they're sploshing it up. So people are into weird things. This, I think, for black people is going to be very psychologically triggering because it makes you feel there's this power transference. There's something that Gerard Carmichael is supposed to be protecting. He doesn't want to protect it. He wants to give it all to white people. And he gets off on that and it's odd. It's odd. It's odd. It's weird. It's odd. It's fucked up. It makes me mad for some reason. It's his personal shit, but it makes me mad. It makes me mad. I don't know why. It makes me mad. It makes me very, very uncomfortable, that whole thing. So what was your slave name when you were doing the whole...
Wow.
What was it? Queenie?
No, man. I didn't have a name because it never happened.
Okay. I don't know.
I just like that is traumatizing. I just don't get it. And I'm so glad. I don't understand it. No.
But the show itself, do you feel like the show is, and seriously, I was being a little argumentative before just picking at you, but you think the show itself You don't think it serves anything? I do think that there's something powerful on the show about...
The trailer didn't give us... Sorry.
No. I'm saying there's something powerful on the show to me seeing a black man live this far into his truth. It's just brutally honest in a way that I think is just very brave. You don't...
No, I do think it's courageous, but I think from watching the trailer, I thought I was going to get more of the family dynamic, which I was very interested to see him as a black man living out who he is and dealing with a Southern religious black family. I guess I wanted him to touch on maybe some of the things that he said in Rothaniel, where he talked about secrets and how his dad had lived this life. And his dad was kind of like, well, your secret's out now. Like, yours is different from mine. You know, I thought, and maybe I need to rewatch the trailer again. Maybe there was, I know we saw some of this, but not, I guess I just was looking forward to the family part of it. And I wanted to see how he navigated that. And I thought that was going to be, and it probably will be very powerful for other people to see, and specifically black gay men with religious families.
Yeah, it's coming. It's happening. It's happening. I think the next couple of shows are going to get into that. I do think there are going to be some people, not you, but there are going to be some people that are turned off by the show because of its unabashed depiction of gay love.
And they need to ask themselves why.
Yeah. What about the eclipse? What is this?
You were flying.
I was in the
air. I don't know what that looks like or if anything can be done.
I was asleep.
I did not go by the glasses, but I thought I read that you could look through it through your camera lens. So I went and took out my camera and tried to take a picture of it. Nothing. But then somebody told me it was only a 25% eclipse. And then I just was like, I thought it was a total.
I think it was only 25% here. I think you have to go somewhere else in the United States of America to get the whole feeling of the eclipse.
Well, because some people were saying it was dark. And I was like, it never got dark where I was. Yeah.
Well, I saw them on, because they made this eclipse thing into like a huge big deal. And I don't know too much about the space. So I'm not sure. I mean, I know this was a big deal in terms of, total eclipse, whatever. So there were people that were going different places to be able to see the eclipse. It was crazy. Eclipse mania is what was going on in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing something recently when I sleep on the plane. It's very interesting. When I'm asleep on the plane, I dream about being on the plane.
What are you doing in your dream about being on the plane?
The plane is flying somewhere crazy and doing crazy things. So like when I'm on the plane, dreaming about the plane, mm-hmm. the plane, like I had a dream that the pilot of the plane that I was on was a super good pilot and was dropping the plane down. But we were in like a really tropical area. It was super beautiful. And the pilot was flying next to the water and dipping the wing in the water and making the water come up. And everybody was like, everybody was all into it. It was like everybody was all into it. People were having a great time. We were on the flight and we were skimming past pristine waters and all of that stuff. And we were getting ready to land. I have reoccurring dreams now about so many different things. Like I dream about this same airport every single time. And it's an airport that like, it's surrounded by tropical stuff, right? But it's in the middle of the sea. And I land there and I go there. And then the plane takes off from there. And then the plane lands there. And then it's almost the same thing. I was in the air dreaming about this as I was flying. And then when I woke up, I thought it was time to land because it was time to land in the dream. But we had 2 hours left to go. It fucked with me. And I had to do many crosswords for the rest of the flight. I don't know. I dreamt about it. Everybody was getting all upset because I was like moving around a lot. You know, whatever.
It says it's a desire to, represents a desire to be above it all, above all the difficulties at the time. The water represents your emotions and feelings. I don't know how you don't look up your dreams immediately. Like last night, I had reoccurring dreams about tornadoes. And last night I was driving down a road and I had to keep pulling over because tornadoes were going beside me. And I drive again and there's another tornado going beside me. And I constantly dream about tornadoes.
What does that mean when you dream about them? What does tornado mean?
Like things are crazy. Okay. Exactly what a tornado are unsettled. Just so you know, yours speaks to your life and so does mine. Do you know what I did this weekend that I've had heard rumors about, but I had never experienced?
Cocaine.
I know. I drove in a car that had no driver. It was a rideshare vehicle. Mm-hmm. That had no driver. Wow. And you get in the car. Yeah. I didn't. Believe me.
So wait, hold on.
I had no choice.
Let me have you. This was a one-nigga weekend.
Nope. This was a one-nigga weekend. Actually, no. There were two of us and one white.
So, okay. Well, that's Oreo. So then, where was this at?
San Francisco.
Interesting.
Which, you know, tech. But it's Waymo. And I'd heard that I didn't realize this was actually in motion. And people were writing me like, oh, yeah, Arizona has it. And it's a rideshare app. You call it. It pulls up and it doesn't just pull up. You know how like an Uber or a Lyft will just stop wherever you are. You wave them and they'll stop in the middle of the street. Waymo doesn't do that because it's not safe. So it drives like to a spot at the intersection, like off to the side. Like it won't just stop in the middle of the street. You get in. You have to use your phone to unlock the car. You get in the car, there's a camera 360 turning around, and you have to press start. And then the wheel, you just see the wheel moving. It's not allowed to get on the freeway. It's not allowed to get on the freeway. And apparently it's about to be in LA.
They should be happy that there are way more niggas than me. Because they cannot rely on me to get in that bitch. Fuck that. Like, you don't watch enough sci-fi. I'm not getting in that.
Oh, home. I was terrified.
It'll be 5 years. Why'd y'all do it then? Why'd y'all do it?
Because I didn't know it was happening. And we were walking and we had to hurry because my friend had to eat so she gets to the airport. And then he's like, oh, I called a car. And then the car, and my friend's big in tech. And he called the car. And I was like, you have got to be fucking kidding me. And they're like, no, it's just that we're just going a couple of blocks. And I had no choice because she had to get to the airport. We had to get there.
You know what's funny is that, you know, I'm talking about Waymo like that, but the reality is the plane that I just flew in, probably like 80% of what had to be done was done by the computer.
But there's somebody overseeing it to where if something happens, they could take control over it. That what I think is what the scariest thing is, because he kept trying to tell me, hey, well, you actually trust a random driver. You don't know what they've been doing or what's going on. You're just letting them drive you around. I'm like, but what if the technology, what if somebody hits the car? What if, like, does it make the car start speeding 60 miles per hour? Does it stop? It's technology. Technology's who's checking the cars every, you know what I mean? There were too many questions for me to be comfortable. We only went a few blocks, but it was an experience.
Yeah, I'm not fucking with Waymo. I mean, at some point we probably will have to.
It's coming.
What I do know is that Caitlin Clark got fucked over. South Carolina.
Fucked over? Is that how you would describe it? Because she lost?
Yeah, she got fucked over. She started off on a heater. South Carolina. I would like to say congratulations to South Carolina for winning the Women's National Championship. Congratulations to them. Okay, they're a fantastic team.
Undefeated team. Yeah, throw that in there.
Undefeated. 87-75 over Iowa. They were just fantastic. They were so well coached. All right. And it's not a situation with Dawn Staley. To where Dawn Staley gets together this whole group of just unbeatable talent and then can't coach them like other coaches in NCAA. She is they make second half adjustments as well as anybody else in basketball. They play defense at a high level. Their switches, they decide to go over picks on Caitlin Clark and made it tough for her. Made her uncomfortable after she started the game. I think she scored 18 in the first quarter, which
in
was
the first,
which was a record. And then she scored 23 in the first half. And then it was 7 points for the rest of the game. They adjusted, took her out of the game, and they were able to cruise to a decisive, not dominant, but a decisive 87-75 win. So congratulations to the Gamecocks. And now Caitlin Clark and Andrew Reese are going to be taking their talents to the Dubs NBA, the Dub-a-Dub. Women's basketball is in a golden age. Mm-hmm. You followed it for a long time. We talked a little bit about it on the last podcast. Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, I hope it continues to the WNBA. I don't know if you saw this, but Diana Taurasi, she been making the rounds too. Because, you know, she and Sue Bird have the show with ESPN where they kind of do the commentary. Not kind of, they do the commentary like the Mannings do. Mm-hmm. And she's been saying some things and she's been on SVP. But I don't know. I don't know if it was an older interview or not. But what she said was that people have a fascination with young women athletes, like whether it's gymnastics, whether it's tennis, whether it's basketball, and then they become pro and people lose interest. Mm. And I thought about that and I was like, that is really true. And it's interesting. And she's like, and pro is what you aspire to be. That's another level. You're the best of the best. You're competing with the best. And so to answer your question, it's making me think of this comment that I saw her make. And so I hope that it doesn't just move into the WNBA, that we're seeing these great stars who have been a part of this golden age now move into the league. So this draft is going to be really exciting to watch. So I hope that people continue to follow their careers, but then also pay attention to the other great people that you love to watch. Also continue on their careers in the league as well. I think that, we'll also now see a new round of stars rise up. You kind of saw it in this game because when we were talking about South Carolina, they lost all five of their starters last year and had to start over. I mean, Tessa was fantastic. She's a freshman.
Fantastic. So, like, you're going to see
these new stars, these new names we're about to talk about. So I hope that they're able to usher that into the WNBA and people start paying attention to the WNBA in a way that they haven't as we're going into the new season. It's exciting. Like, the timing is so right now because the WNBA season is about to start soon. The draft, they have their season. And then I hope that the excitement carries on. I saw a girl from Stanford, and I can't think of her name, say that somebody told her, I can name five college women's basketball players, but I can't name five men. And I thought, wow.
Naming five men is tough.
Wow.
The game is tonight, and nobody cares.
UConn,
it's Purdue. And UConn.
Nobody cares.
Zach Edey.
Ashley, can you look up how many people watched that game yesterday, please?
It's 14 million.
Wow.
It's 14 million. So numbers.
And I thought the timing was terrible. And still 14 million people. I hated the timing of the game.
Why?
It was in the middle of the day. Yeah. I was at the airport trying to watch it. It should be a night game.
You know what's interesting?
18.7. Put some respect on it, Van.
18.7. That's 18.7. No, 14 might have been UConn and then for the 18 is nuts. It's nuts.
It probably is like the next day stuff that they're just, but 18.7?
There's a tremendous amount of pressure on Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark.
Did you see what
Diana Taurasi said? Yeah, Diana Taurasi, yes. And the rest of them already. Brown Stewart, they smell blood in the water. They want to get these ladies up there and show them who's boss.
And I like that.
That's how it has to be.
Yeah.
That's how it is in every single sport. You goddamn rookie, you. Come over here so that we can fuck over you and show you that you're not the hot shit that you think that you are. When the NBA was still making the transition to becoming a major, major, major American sporting power, of course, we know that Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were instrumental in ushering that in. Those guys delivered. They took what they started in college. And then you had Bird become a three-time MVP, three in a row. You had Magic Johnson become a five-time champion. You had the Lakers and the Celtics, teams that had a lot of great players on them, but that were anchored by two undeniable forces. Fantastic players, but also in ways, people that represented dueling cultural realities. And you have that thing right now. The players themselves have to deliver. If Angel Reese, I keep saying Angel Reese because Caitlin Clark is definitely the star here. You can't take anything away from her. But Angel's attitude, her brashness, the way she's been able to move throughout what celebrity that she's had right now, her cultural viability, it's going to be as important to me that she's represented in the WNBA, that she is able to continue being the Bayou Barbie in the WNBA as Caitlin Clark, and that their rivalry continues there. Caitlin Clark is going to have her choice of rivals. Everybody is going to want a piece of Caitlin Clark. She's going to have her choice of rivals. But it's to me a huge, huge moment in the history of the league. And the story basically could not be playing out any better. The players have to deliver. And Juju, Paige Buckner, all of these players that are coming up behind them are going to come into a different league. And they're just, we're going to be ready for it. Watching Juju play is crazy as well. Different league. It's a different league next year. Everybody's going to be watching. Everybody's going to be seeing what's up. And if the play continues, the W's out of here. Bye-bye to commercial flights. You know, like the W's going to be out of here. It's such an exciting time.
It is. It is.
You don't care. You don't care about them.
Oh, okay. Anymore.
Did you see Dawn Staley asked about the transgender athletes and whether or not she should be able to play?
Yes, but what I also saw is you say you didn't know people cared so much about Dawn Staley.
I did. I didn't know that. You know.
What do you mean? Are you? Is it that all these people were tweeting after her win? Because I feel like people have been behind her for a while. What was it in particular that you saw? It was the LeBron tweet.
It wasn't. So everyone loves. Everyone loves Dawn Staley. I love Dawn Staley. Dawn Staley has been in my life going on 30 some odd years, watching Dawn Staley play ball. Dawn Staley is going, like I said, she's going to be the Nick Saban of women's college basketball, I think so. If she stays around long enough. There's some talk by some people that maybe some NBA teams might want to take advantage of Dawn Staley and bring Dawn Staley.
I thought about that.
Who knows? Who knows? She stays there, she'll end up being one of those ones. The reason why I was saying that is I was picking at people. Everyone loves Dawn Staley, but people were super happy that Caitlin Clark lost. Okay? I'm not gonna tell you who said this, but as soon as the game was over, a friend that's very close to me hit me up and he said, "That honky ball ain't winning no chip."
We should laugh. We should laugh.
Well, my whole voice was like, "Bro, I told you that honky ball ain't winning no chip." I'm like, "Bro, relax, man."
Do you think that changes her legacy?
Whose legacy?
Because there's so many narratives surrounding all of this, which I just love.
She's a once in a generation fantastic basketball player.
She drugged into the Final Four twice.
It's like
that's just one of the things people are saying. She didn't win. Yeah, she got there twice, so close twice, but couldn't carry her team to a champion or to win a championship.
She lost to two teams that were superior to her. It's not unlike the Fab Five or other situations like this. I think that had she won, willing a team to victory like a la Danny Manning or someone like that, she goes on the Mount Rushmore of college basketball, period, which she might already be on. She's the all-time leading scorer in college basketball, so she probably is. I think she's fantastic. I think she's amazing. I think the way she plays is infectious and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
She did get D'd up. She did get D'd up, you know, second half. If she'd have gone for like 40 or 50 in that game, and they'd have pulled that game off, we talking next level type of dumb shit that she was on. But she didn't. It didn't happen. But the reason why I said the Dawn Staley thing is because I know everyone has so much love for Dawn Staley. I have so much love for Dawn Staley. But a lot of the, oh my God, we're so happy that the Carolina Gamecocks won, was tribalism surrounding the game. It was people that are like, I'm glad Caitlin Clark lost. We kind of don't really like her that much. We wanted LSU to beat her. I was having a conversation with some people, and they were talking about the fact that, like, Jamel had wrote something that talked about the reality that some of the recognition that Caitlin Clark gets is because she's white. Of course, that's true, right? But it's not novel. Some of the recognition that Serena Williams got was because she was black. Now, I'm not saying that Serena Williams wasn't the best player. She's the best player on that tennis court I've ever seen. But the fact that she was black and the best player made me care about her in a different way.
Yeah.
Like the fact that Tiger Woods was black and the best made me care about Tiger Woods in a different way. The fact that Simone Biles is black and the best gymnast I ever saw makes me care about her in a different way. I don't know why white people are so above thinking, why they don't want to let us in on the secret that they feel that way. They definitely feel that way. They definitely feel like I like to see a white girl out there busting motherfuckers' ass. They like it. They like it. And it's what's the big deal? I know that you like it. Real quick, I told the story on the Midnight Boys. We can move on after this. One of my friends, we were watching Floyd Mayweather beat the dog shit out of Arturo Gatti. Rest in peace, Arturo Gatti. Okay. If you guys ever want to see a truly one-sided boxing match, I think it was 6 rounds in Atlantic City. Floyd Mayweather had moved up to, I think it was 140. It's before he's at welterweight. He's coming out of some of the lighter weight classes. I think it's at 140. I'm almost sure it's at 140. And he's fighting Arturo Gatti, who Arturo Gatti was a slugger, like a Rocky type fighter at 135, 140. And he was a fan favorite because of how much punishment he took and gave out. Gatti Ward, all of this stuff. It's great fights. And Floyd was fighting him and just beat the shit out of him. And I'm watching it with my friend, his white boy. And as Floyd is taking this motherfucker apart, my homeboy looks at me and he goes, don't you think it sucks that boxing's become so skilled that the true warrior can't win anymore? And I looked at him. I was like, if you don't get the fuck out of my face with that true warrior shit, we whooping ass right true now. Look warrior. At your man in there. The true warrior. I'm like, they're about to stop this bitch. This is crazy. Look at your man in there. Bop, bop, bum. This is what it was. It was bum. Every time. Bum, 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 bum. Floyd was in the pocket. Move, move, move. Pull counter. Bum. And I started talking shit because I knew what he meant. I knew what he meant. What he was saying in his head was like, these white boys don't have a shot against that shit.
Of course he was saying that.
Which isn't true. Because Lomachenko and all of these other guys, plenty of, like, we just went through a whole decade where a lot of fighters fucking knocking the shit out of niggas and they was white. Like, Ukrainians specifically just don't give a fuck. They're out there just beat the shit out you. But anyway, look, you liked her because she was white and she was doing the thing. And you liked her because she also shoots like Steph Curry and the whole nine, but the whiteness is a part of it. What's the big deal? Fuck it. Move on. All right, let's go. The Rock. Before we get out of here, The Rock was at WrestleMania. The main event in WrestleMania was fantastic. The Rock came out there. He faced off against John Cena. It was amazing. Now, you guys, if you have Peacock.
They wrestled?
So listen, I'm trying to tell you. You don't even know. I'm trying to tell you right now. Main event WrestleMania was Bloodline rules. I mean, anything goes. People jump in, interfere. It's all fucking okay. They're using sticks, they're using chairs, and going outside of the ring, no DQs. So a bunch of wrestlers came out because the different stables were trying to turn the tide of the match for their guy. So Cody was, the Roman was losing, And then one of the Usos ran out. And then the other Uso brother ran out. And then they fought. And then the other member of the Bloodline came out. And then they fought. And then John Cena came out. And then after John Cena came out, The Rock came out. Everybody's interest music is playing when they come out. Then after The Rock came out, the craziest thing happened. Even Kalika was like, oh my God. The whole place went dark and you just heard the bells ringing. And you knew it was time for The Undertaker to come out. And The Rock turns around and The Undertaker's just like in the middle of the ring. It was fantastic. I'm telling you, it was like WWE.
That does sound fun. That's
it was fun as hell. But The Rock said that he endorsed Biden for president in 2020 and it caused division. I don't do it anymore. I don't endorse anyone this time. Play the clip, Ashley.
Are you happy that you made that endorsement in 2020? Are you happy with the state of America?
Am I happy with the state of America right now? Well, that answer is no. Do I believe we're going to get better? I believe in that. I'm an optimistic guy, and I believe we can get better. The endorsement that I made years ago with Biden was one I thought was the best decision for me at that time. And I thought back then, when we talk about, hey, you know, I'm in this position where I have some influence, and it's my job then. I felt like that then. It's my job now to exercise my influence and share with this is who I'm going to endorse. Am I going to do that again this year? That answer is no. I'm not going to do that because what I realized, and I didn't realize it back then, Will, but I realize it today. And back then, just like I am today, very lucky, I was then the most followed American man in the world, and I am today the most followed American man in the world, and I appreciate that. But I also realized that what that caused back then was something that tears me up in my guts back then and now, which is division. And that got me. And I didn't realize it then. I just thought, hey, our country feels like there's a lot of unrest. It feels like I would like things to calm down. Maybe we need a change. This is what I'm going to do, and this is who I'm going to endorse. The takeaway after that, months and months and months, I started to realize like, oh man, that caused an incredible amount of division in our country. So I realize now going into this election, I'm not gonna do that. I wouldn't do that because my goal is to bring our country together. I believe in that, in my DNA. So in the spirit of that, there's gonna be no endorsement. Not that I'm afraid of it at all, but it's just, I realize that this level of influence, I'm going to keep my politics to myself, and I think it's between me and the ballot box. But I will tell you this. While, like a lot of us out there, not trusting of all politicians, I do trust the American people, and I trust that whoever they vote for, that's going to be my president, and that's who I'm going to support 100%.
Right. Rachel.
The Rock goes on Will Cain show on Fox News and makes this statement. I guess I have more questions than I even do with a comment. Who were you so upset? First off, you made a choice. You chose to endorse a president in 2020. It was a choice that was made. People have choices to make other decisions in who they want to lead the country. Obviously, people are going to object to and not agree with your endorsement of President Biden for those who do not want him. So to me, those are the only people that you're talking to. You're not talking to us who endorse Biden or who are honestly pro-Trump. That's who he was running against. You're talking to the people that you upset or that were so bothered by you because you're the Rock, right? You're the most followed man. It's almost as if he thinks that because he's the most followed man in the world, that everybody likes him. And so every decision he makes, he doesn't want to rattle anything. He just wants to be the guy who's liked. And that's not the case when you make a decision to endorse somebody because you're making a choice and half the country or around that is going to make a different choice. So it sounds like he couldn't handle being disliked. And it sounds like he is speaking to a very specific audience. And that's evident by who he's talking to and whose show he went on to make this statement. He's basically saying, I'm sorry, guys, I shouldn't have done that. And now I'm going to keep it to myself. I'm not going to stand up for what I believe in. And I'm not even sure I know what that is anymore when it comes to The Rock. But what I do want you to know is that I am more into pleasing people than I am for standing for something. That's the message I got.
Yeah. So The Rock is a conservative Republican. He's always been that. He's probably a moderate conservative to a degree, but he's never been no mystery about where The Rock's political leanings are. I couldn't give a fuck less who The Rock decides to vote for. I think that he has a really insanely heightened view of himself. If he thinks that most people give a fuck who The Rock is going to vote for, I think people are probably going to be mad at who The Rock decides he's going to be voted for. But as far as anybody going, huh, you know what? I think this is, I don't know. I don't know how much that, how much water that holds with people. I think I would be interested in knowing from The Rock and from anybody else that wants to talk about politics, and I have to be better at this myself, what your vision of America is, right? Because if you're talking more about what you think this country should be doing, how you think this country should be functioning, I get a better sense of your political IQ, your cultural IQ, and who you are. And then I can kind of discern where you are, right? The whether or not you are going to vote for Biden or Trump is mostly tribalism now. And when I say mostly tribalism, I mean it is a way for people to decide whether or not they fuck with you more than it is a substantive argument or discussion about politics. Now, I don't really feel the need to have a substantive discussion about politics with Trump supporters, because I think there's just too much meat on the bone there in terms of who Donald Trump is. It does say something about you if you support him. But the questions about whether or not you're supporting Biden or Trump are normally rage bait. They're normally like rage bait either for the left or rage bait either for the right. And if he doesn't want to do that, that's fine. But if he wants to talk about politics, he actually needs to talk about politics. And if you think that America is not doing well and we will do better, I think he needs to talk about how he feels like we're not doing well, how he feels like we need to do better, what doing better looks like, where we need to be doing better, and how he needs to see America grow and change. Here's the issue with that. I've never known The Rock to care about black issues. A black man, I've never known him to care about that. So if The Rock had issues with the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, or if he had issues with voting rights or all of those things, I'd be very surprised. On most of the metrics that I think he would judge the health of the country on, I think America's probably trending in a way that would be positive to him. If obviously, there are boogeyman issues, the border, things like that, that you can take pictures of and then send them around. And obviously, those are things that we need to talk about, and how we deal with migrants who want to work, and how we make this happen. And we need to stop maybe politicizing that and putting people's humanity first. But what I would say is, like, if The Rock thinks that America is in a worse place than it was in 2020 when he made his endorsement, I don't remember when his endorsement was, but if it was any time after March, then The Rock is smoking dick. He's nuts. If it was any time after March, I don't see how you could say that America is in a worse place than it was then.
Well, there was no follow-up question. There was no follow-up question when he answered that.
Because the question wasn't... Will is asking that question to make The Rock palatable to the Fox News audience, which is why he's got his liquor out there. He wants to say, I'm not your enemy. I was wrong. Once again,
yes.
Like, big time celebrity, he's got something to sell you. And what he's selling you right now is the headline that The Rock regrets endorsing Joe Biden. And also remember where he has it, where he's at in his career right now. Yeah. Rock came back to the WWE and it was fantastic, but he came back to the WWE when his career is in a little bit of a lull. He, Black Adam fucking tanked. Jungle Cruise fucking tanked. And if you're The Rock, you might be thinking, are people not going to see these movies because I have injured my parts of my fan base that would have gone to see them? Now, both of those movies fucking sucked, but Black Adam was enjoyable in some spots, but both of those movies were pretty bad. And for him, these celebrities that are all self-serving, they'll start to coalesce around things that they know, which is how to be liked. It's nothing divisive about endorsing somebody for president. There's nothing divisive about it. Like, there's nothing divisive. It's not a divisive thing. Now, if you want to keep your shit to yourself, I understand it, but there's nothing divisive about it.
He lets you know what he values in that interview. You already said it, the liquor and the fact that he's the most followed person in the world. Then 4 years ago, and oh, by the way, just in case y'all didn't know, now. And I want to stay that way. So I'm saying what I need to say to maintain that, which again goes against his point. If what you said was so divisive, you still have the same amount of people following you. Yeah. And you're like, you didn't even rock it, whatever.
Oh, he's basically saying, hey, I'm the Rock. Rock.
Yeah.
It's okay to like me. Apparently the city girls are beefing now.
Yeah, let's move on.
No, the city girls are beefing against each other.
Yeah, like there's always been this rumor with JT, like Young Miami was at this reality show. JT wasn't a part of it. They've always been kind of like, wasn't going to be a part of it. She's like, nope. They kind of have been doing their separate thing for a while now. Anyway, I think the city girls are done.
Yeah, all right. We got to go. Look. Take the caps off. God, stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys. Are you okay?